Greetings! Greetings once again! That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Happy Juneteenth weekend! That's right.
No, it was that.
It's the. No, it's still Juneteenth weekend.
Why?
Because
the whole weekend.
Okay. It's the whole weekend. I mean, come on. Memorial Day's got nothing on Juneteenth weekend. We're still celebrating.
So I thought.
No, the Juneteenth weekend runs from Friday, Juneteenth, all the way through maybe even Monday. I don't know if they get Monday off or we get Monday off. Not they. Did I say they? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to imply that I was racist. I meant the people who celebrate Juneteenth. I was talking about federal workers who get the day off. But did it sound like I was racist? I promise I'm not. Please. Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay. And I know, normally, of course, here at the Weekly Worldview, we take the whole Juneteenth weekend off because it's one of the biggest weekends of the year. But we're taking one for the team this year, and we are going on the air, broadcast for you, because we want you to enjoy your Juneteenth weekend. That's why we're willing to work. And for the big Juneteenth weekend, Don Lemon hosted Kamala Harris. And normally I don't make fun of Kamala Harris, but number one, it's too easy and it's like low-hanging fruit for any comedian. Is anytime Kamala Harris opens her mouth, it's like handing comedians material.
Don Lemon, too.
Don Lemon, too. Frankly, Don Lemon's pretty good for material, too. But this particular story points out something bigger and deeper and wider than just the stupidity of Kamala Harris and the vapidity of Don Lemon, which are always easy and on display, and they're easy to knock out of the park. But listen to this. Kamala Harris appeared on Don Lemon's big Juneteenth podcast, where she said the following, quote, "I really truly believe this. We each have light inside of us, and we need to know that this is what inspires our hope as much as anything external to ourselves. And we feel that and not allow an election or an individual to dampen that light. And instead, let the light kind of carry us in particular through moments of darkness, that we not only act on that hope, but we inspire that hope in each other. And in particular, at this moment, it is so important that we not only have that hope, but that we understand that that should be a verb." Unquote.
Have another drink.
All righty. So, like, okay. So that's why it's such low-hanging fruit. So, like, the drunkenness is just, that goes without saying, right? She sounds like she's been drinking, okay? And maybe she took some pills on top of that. So that's why it's so easy. But the big hubbub when I was perusing the news on my right-wing conservative aggregators this morning was that she implied that hope needed to be changed into a verb. And all of the commentators said hope is already a verb. And that was the big hubbub. They were making fun of her for that. And so I had to read through the story a couple times because I went to public school too, okay? Me and Kamala both. Both. Since it's Juneteenth weekend, me and Kamala both went to public school. So, I mean, we're both handicapped to some degree already, okay? So, when you read through this statement that she made on Don Lemon's big Juneteenth podcast, you realize that the verb part, what she said about the verb, is actually the only part that maybe you could explain as making some sense in her entire statement. But even making sense of what she said about the about the verb, that requires some analysis. But if you read it, up until the end of her statement, she had used hope in the statement exclusively as a noun. So for her to then say that it should be a verb, that could make sense. I mean, had she set it up more intelligently, you might have made sense of it and it might not have seemed funny to you. Also, if you were better educated, all of you people who are laughing at Kamala Harris for this statement, I mean, it exposes your own ignorance, just so you know, okay? Now, we all know that no one can understand what Kamala Harris says as she says it. I mean, because it's actually designed to be meaningless. Everything she says is designed to be meaningless. And I don't mean that it's designed by a conspiratorial cabal that's like controlling her or writing all of her material. That's not what I mean. I mean it's designed by the educational system that produced her and hundreds of millions of other stupid people just like her. Stupid, intellectually handicapped people, myself included, having matriculated in the government schools myself, although I did avoid college. She obviously did not. But so the educational system that produced, that vomited out Kamala Harris at the end of 16 or 18, 20 years, however long she went, that system designed her patterns of thought and speech to be meaningless. And so she is a product indicative of their success in their mission to make people's lives, thoughts, and words meaningless. But the hubbub over her use of a verb as related to hope, it exposes the intellectual paucity of both sides. That's right. Pull your MAGA hat off and go look up paucity. P-A-U-C-I-T-Y. Neither red nor blue know how to think or read or speak English. And English was the last great hope for civilization. And so all is lost, at least here on Earth. Here on the big Juneteenth weekend, our encouragement to you is to find salvation in the forgiveness of Jesus Christ, my friends, because none of these idiots are going to help. None of them. Whether they're red, blue, on the left, on the right, whether they're wearing a MAGA hat, or they've got a rainbow flag tattooed somewhere on their body, none of them are going to help. They're going to get us all killed. I know. It's a cheerful Juneteenth message because it's a cheerful type of weekend. All right. Now, onto the Iran negotiations. As far as the Iran negotiations go, let me just state my position from the beginning. I have believed that America would be justified in killing and replacing the government of Iran since late 1979, since I was a kid. When I joined the service in the military, I thought I was going to be fighting against Iran or someone like them or someone linked with them. So how that never happened is, I guess, luck on my part, but some level of general cowardice on the part of the political leadership of America. So when Donald Trump bombed Iran and when he killed their supreme leader, I was very encouraged. I thought that was the right thing to do. Now, of course, I wasn't aware of everything going on behind the scenes. I've never been all that impressed with Donald Trump. I've always been a bit concerned for the fact that he's a relatively stupid person. So, I mean, okay, Now, don't get your MAGA hat all up in a Twitter, okay? I apologize if I've insulted you, but Donald Trump has proven himself over the 40 years that I was aware of his career to be relatively stupid. He was a left-wing Democrat. A philandering egomaniac for the whole time, and then all of a sudden he became the savior of Christian politics in America. So forgive me, I didn't buy it right off top, okay? So I was concerned, but I was pleasantly not surprised. I don't know. I was encouraged that finally an American president had the courage to do the right thing and kill the guy responsible for killing so many of our guys. And by the way, he was threatening the president of the United States personally with assassination. There's no doubt about that. And those records will come out. It'll be very clear. The reason Donald Trump killed that guy was because that guy had tried to kill Donald Trump. More than likely on more than one occasion. But anyway, back now that we've been going through this for I don't know how long, 3 months? Coming up on 4 months, right? Which is a relatively short period of time. But in the modern news cycle, in the modern age, with the modern globalized trade infrastructure being what it is, 4 months turns out to be quite a long period of time for oil production and the free flow to be disrupted, and things are coming to a head. And I will admit that I have been hoping for some sort of quick negotiated end to the conflict for my own selfish reasons. Seriously, I don't want to pay $1,000 for a plane ticket, and I don't want to pay $10 for a gallon of gas. I'll admit it that I'm selfish in that way, and I've allowed that to color my thinking. Hoping that now that Donald Trump failed to produce the wave of Thomas Jeffersons to step up and overthrow the Iranian government and write the next great libertarian constitution, now that that failed, which is what I think Donald Trump was counting on, which was pretty stupid in hindsight, which since that didn't happen, and then obviously since Donald Trump wasn't prepared to take the governing infrastructure of Texas and just simply install it there in Iran, which was my plan, that's what I would have done. Since none of that happened, I was hoping for a relatively quick negotiated settlement that would hopefully be at least in our favor, at least for some period of time. And all that was supposed to start in Switzerland or Stockholm or wherever they are. Wherever it is that J.D. Vance flew off to negotiate the final deal, I think it's Switzerland. So I was hoping for all of that. Anyway, and then I read the papers this morning and I'm thinking, is it wise to threaten to kill the negotiators while you're negotiating with them? I'm all for tough negotiations and I'm all for holding your ground. But to actually threaten to kill them while they're negotiating, I'm just not sure that's wise. And then again, I'm not really sure that that's even real. Did Donald Trump actually threaten to kill the negotiators while they were negotiating? Was that leaked? Was it made up? That's the thing. In the modern age, where the media and intelligence and data infrastructure are what they are, it's really hard to know or believe what's actually true anymore. And just because a reporter vomits it out on Fox News and then it's picked up by everyone else, we don't actually know if it's real. The only way we may know if it's real, now that last I read the Iranians had walked out on the negotiations, I guess the only way we'll know if that was real was if Donald Trump blows their airplane out of the sky while they're on their way back to Iran. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That's it. Let that one roll. So, by the way, folks, I just want you to know, being involved in an interracial marriage, my extremely attractive audio engineer and I are allowed some latitude with the racial humor. That's right. Unlike all you other white people, we don't have to prove we're not racist all the time because we're married to a person of the other race and we don't hate them. You don't hate me, do you? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. Because that would be the perfect cover. You marry a person of another race because you hate them just to convince the other people you're not a racist when really you are the whole time. It's diabolical, I tell you. All right. So if you're offended by racial humor, turn this show off right now because you will be offended. In fact, let's move right on to a black politician, Byron Donalds. Oh, no. Was I not supposed to notice he's black? I apologize. And then, oh, man, the word Cracker Barrel is in the article. This is rough. This is perfect for a Juneteenth weekend when everybody suspects you're a racist because you're white. Anyway, so what happened, folks? Just so you know, a white friend of mine who's married to a minority posted a post on Juneteenth basically saying, I'm not a racist. And he had pictures of different colored hands clapping or thumbs upping or something. And I'm thinking, why is this guy posting a thing saying I hate racism or racism is bad or whatever on Juneteenth? I mean, it's almost as bad as taking the knee for George Floyd, in my opinion. Just because Juneteenth rolls around doesn't mean every white boy has to get on his knees and say I'm not a racist. Or does it? It doesn't mean that to me. If it means that to you, I can't help you. You need to check yourself. I don't understand. All right, now back to Byron Donalds. This is from the This is from the Religious Organ File. A religious organ, this is Breitbart.com. Is a religious organ, I believe, of the Catholic Church. Now, I'm not 100% sure because they do give lip service to Protestantism and Pentecostalism if it comes across their radar, I'm sure. Any of the fake, phony Christian religions that are politically convenient, Breitbart will give them lip service, but it seems to me, especially the Catholics, and I don't know if Byron Donalds is a Catholic. Let's try to find out here. Representative Byron Donalds is a Republican from Florida, and he shared his faith journey with Breitbart the Sunday past. Not the Juneteenth weekend, but the weekend prior. And in sharing his faith journey, which, by the way, I'm just curious, what is that faith journey? Because as I understand the faith, the moment you believe, you're in. There's no more journey. I suppose you could continue to learn and grow and come to the knowledge of the truth, as the Apostle Paul tells us in Timothy, but a faith journey? I'm not sure where that comes from. Anyway, if you can help me, please send me, point me to the direction so that I can understand the faith journey. Maybe I'm having one and I don't even know it. I could be enjoying a faith journey. And because I never found it in the Bible, I'm missing it. Well, Byron's not. He's on a faith journey and he's obviously campaigning to become the governor, which is why his Christianity is being put on display at Breitbart, the religious organ of the MAGA Republican, that whole thing. Yeah, they mentioned that he has President Trump's endorsement. By the way, not only is he on a faith journey, he's got Donald Trump's endorsement, which puts him right in line for a big write-up on the religious organ, Breitbart. And in the interview, he recalled how God found him in an unlikely place. Why was it unlikely? Because he was a black guy working at a place called Cracker Barrel. That's right. Not to be too ironic. But he says it was at the Cracker Barrel that he says, I, quote, gave my life to Jesus Christ. That's right. Now, stop me here. I'm not sure what that means, that he gave his life to Jesus Christ. Because as I read the Bible and the gospel, there's no part in there about Jesus needing my life or wanting my life. I thought the whole gospel was me needing his life. But just in case Jesus was in need, Byron Daniels was there as a 21-year-old black guy working at a Cracker Barrel to give Jesus his life. And he's going to tell us all about that in the big write-up in Breitbart. He says that while he was in the parking lot, listen to this, quote, the Lord spoke to me, unquote. The Lord spoke to him. He is very swell, you know. Maybe the Lord knew that one day he was going to be in Congress and he was going to run for governor. There's a life Jesus could use, right, if he needed one. Fortunately, Byron Donalds gave him his life because Jesus happened to need the governor of Florida, a potential governor. So what did Jesus say when he spoke to Byron Donalds? Jesus said, quote, stop running from me, unquote. Okay. And then, I know. Well, and here's the thing. So people who actually understand the Bible laugh out loud at that. And then people who don't believe in God and are on their way straight to hell with jet rockets because they're sinners, they laugh out loud at that too when they say, Byron Donalds, Jesus spoke to you in the parking lot of Cracker Barrel. They laugh at him. Because it's laughable for him to say this, yet it'll get him votes in Florida for governor. So do the math on that. Who can comprehend this? It's all insanity. All right. let's see. He reiterates in the article toward the end, I gave my life to Christ that day. And then he goes on and on about about his journey. And he does mention the word grace because if you're going to mention your faith journey and how you gave your life to Jesus, you definitely want to throw grace in there at some point because you know that Christians expect to hear grace. So anyway, I hope that Byron Donalds took up Jesus on his offer to give his life for Byron Donalds because that's nowhere here in the article that Byron Donalds like, thank Jesus for dying for my sins. Please forgive me. Help me. There's none of that in here. None of the journey included that. But I hope Byron took Jesus up on the offer of Jesus' life since Christ didn't need Byron Donald's life. He didn't need it at all. Is it Byron Donalds or Byron Jordan? Why did I say Biden? I wrote in my note Byron Jordan. Isn't that... you remember where that came from. Okay, so Byron Donalds. Okay, there you go. That's from the religious organ. And now we go from there to the Evangisteria file. Uh-huh. Evangisteria. I believe I've coined a new word. It's evangelical hysteria, and it finds itself in the Evangisteria file, where we have an article from Natural News. Natural News, by the way, is a generally hysterical, not Christian. It's hard for me to describe what they are. They're primarily anti-vax, and they have been since even before anti-vax was cool. And because so many things during the COVID hysterical mania showed them to be correct in a number of the things they said, Natural News has now experienced a vast increase in readership, especially among rational people and Christians who didn't flip out and freak out recognized the communist takeover for what it was and all of that. The people who recognized the COVID conspiracy were exposed to a lot of stuff on natural news because they had been saying a number of those things all along. But for all of you who read natural news, and I do read it, I have a story from it here. What do they say? Eat the chicken and spit out the bones? Eat the fish and spit out the bones? Anyway, there's some good things, and then there's some, well, there's things like this. This is from the Evangisteria file. Stories designed to put evangelicals into hysteria. Natural news is very good at that. Almost as good as Alex Jones. Almost. Maybe not even in the same league. But they're right there. Here's the story. The techno-feudal trap. That's right. Big food and big pharma have engineered my captivity. I'm basically a serf to big food and big pharma, and I don't even know it. I'm a slave, and I don't even know it. Which brings up the question, if you don't know you're a slave, are you a slave? Because slavery is no doubt a state of being, but is it not also a state of mind? If a slave loves his master and he's happy to be a slave, and he doesn't want to leave, is he a slave? I suppose technically he's a slave, but I mean, read that whole Bible story about putting his earlobe up against the doorpost, driving through with a nail. I'm telling you, there's a lot there, first of all. If you want to get into some deep Bible study, just search the word all, A-U-L, in a King James Bible on your phone, and just read that story. Okay. But the evangelicals, what would I call them here then? If I've coined that word, let's coin another one. Evangelicals. These are people who make money causing evangelicals to be hysterical about things, which is not that hard. They're one of the most easily frightened and upset groups. Next to the gays. I think the gays are the only ones more easily offended and stirred up into a tizzy than the evangelicals. But these are the evangelicals. They say that we're all part of a feudal, we've been caught in a feudal trap. We're basically not proles, not pawns. What's the word I was looking for? I just said it earlier and then I can't remember the word. When you're in a feudal, a serf. We're all serfs. And the reason is 11 companies control most consumer goods. Just 11 companies control most. So let that sink in. Number two, the health industry profits from chronic illness, not cures. Now, there is some truth to that. I can't. Right. In fact, the 11 companies that control most of the consumer, there's some truth to that, too. You know, if you don't take in to account the other 15,000 companies that account for all the other stuff, the 11 that control most, that seems scary. And then the health industry that profits from chronic illness. Well, if you look at the giant big pharma companies that do seem to have an interest in sick people, and you don't count the other tens of thousands of companies that are trying to make people feel better and be healthier, then the health industry does. There is some truth to that. Here's the third reason we're all serfs and slaves and we've been caught in a techno-feudal trap. A small group of billionaires, tech elites like Musk, Altman, and Bezos, are building a future where humans are obsolete. Okay. There's some truth to that. Let's face it. Elon Musk, Altman, who I'm not sure what his first name is. I think he's the AI guy. Is he a billionaire? Seriously? Okay. And then Bezos. I mean, these are wicked, evil, self-interested heathens who live by their own belly and are motivated by their own fleshly lusts and desires. So that is problematic. Are they building a future where humans are obsolete? There may be some truth to that. Should I worry about that? I don't know. No matter how powerful Musk, Altman, and Bezos are, well, let me go on with the fourth point and the fifth in case you're not hysterical yet. Some are calling for, now that those are the big three. So now that you're into a hysterical tizzy about it all, some are calling for, the Natural News suggests, some are calling for non-compliance, such as urging followers to stop paying taxes. That's right, a tax revolt, as is also being proffered by Tucker Carlson and others in the evangelisteria industry. And you may ask yourself, is it right for me to participate in a tax revolt? Is that moral according to the Bible? Would I be okay with that? Is God going to be mad if I stop paying my taxes? Because I remember when they asked Jesus to pay the taxes, he said to pay the taxes, but then he got them out of a fish's mouth, and I don't have a fish, and does that apply to me? So I would encourage you, tune in to this coming week's Bible study where we're going to discuss conflict resolution and what applies to us in the Bible and what doesn't apply. Because believe it or not, there are some things in the Bible that were not written to you and do not apply to you. Although I know that you've been taught you are the focus of the entire book and that the entire Bible is God's personal love letter to you, it turns out that that's not true. Despite what all the evangelicals have told you, that's not true. So tune in and you can find out if you should be involved in a tax revolt. And then listen to this, what the evangelists say over at Natural News. The final call to action is not to wait for saviors, but to build self-reliant communities. Grow your own food. Learn practical skills, first aid, gardening, how to repair things. Use local currency, form barter networks. And then they challenge everyone to live our values and become the hero by taking local, tangible action. And then you find out at the end, this is all hyping a book that they're selling. There's more to this. If you're not hysterical enough, buy the book and don't wait for saviors. Become your own hero, which if you think that's the solution, I highly suggest you tune into this week's Bible study as well. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Since we went over in that last segment, I thought we should let the bumper play long.
Why?
Well, I like that song. I know.
It was too long.
It's my extremely attractive audio engineer, who is the audio engineer. She's not happy with... And I do agree that it's very difficult to understand much of what the singer said in that song. It's maybe not quite as bad as Kamala Harris, but certainly would require some analysis to figure out just what was going on there, except for the chorus, which makes perfect sense when analyzing the evangelistic crowd and the right-wing news aggregators and the ad men selling you advertising while convincing you that what you're listening to and doing is actually important, which, by the way, I just realized, I had an epiphany while preparing for this week's show that it turns out that's what Rush Limbaugh was. Rush Limbaugh was a talented ad man and a bright salesman who sold me advertising for 20 years while convincing me I was listening to a show that mattered and would make a difference. But the whole thing was just to sell me the ads. So if you're not ready to admit that to yourself about Rush Limbaugh and the right-wing media and Sean Hannity, although it should be a lot more obvious with Sean Hannity, for crying out loud, I mean. But anyway, if you're not ready to admit that to yourself, that we were all duped into chuckling about the death of our civilization while it happened in real time in front of our eyes, if you're not ready to admit you were duped, get ready. We're going to get you ready here at the Weekly Worldview because it's liberating to come to that understanding. Don't be afraid of it. Meanwhile, let's move on to the bad religion file where we check in with Antonio Banderas. Did I say Banderas? That's because I'm not Mexican or Spanish or Portuguese or Chilean or wherever else they might speak Spanish or have that beautiful brown skin that I love so much. No, I'm not a racist. I promise. I celebrate Juneteenth.
That has nothing to do with
okay. Oh, yeah, that doesn't help. We're going to take our lowrider out on Cinco de Mayo. So there you go. Oh, it's already past Cinco de Mayo. Next year is what I was talking about. You know, we celebrate it every year. That's how I didn't know it had already passed. All right. Antonio Banderas met with the Pope. He had audience with the Pope. Why? Because he's a multimillionaire Catholic. That's why. He's famous actor Catholic, and if you're a famous actor Catholic, you get an audience with the Pope. And that brings up another topic. I'll tell you what. If you listen to Real Science Radio, I am going to do a segment. If it could get me kicked off of Real Science Radio, we'll see. About the Catholic Church and what I learned about them in our search for information on natural procreative technologies, which alternative to IVF, it's easily 50% more successful just clinically. And of course, it's not immoral because you're not killing people. But in researching, trying to find someone to tell us about that, I learned something valuable about the Catholic Church that I'm going to air, and it's going to be very unpleasant for anyone who has any inkling of respect or anything for the Catholic Church. Because whatever I had left for the Catholic Church is gone after that experience. And then we've got this, Antonio Banderas. He says, here we got the article is from ChristianPost.com, which should rename itself to PostChristian.com. Because they're going to act like Antonio Banderas. They're going to talk about Antonio Banderas and the Catholic Church, and then they're going to pretend that they're Christian, which proves that ChristianPost.com is post-Christian. The Spanish actor, according to ChristianPost.com. The Spanish actor shared personal reflections during Pope Leo's apostolic visit to Spain. Notice how Christian Post calls the Pope's visit apostolic, buying into the flagrant, damnable, heretical lie that the Pope has any connection to any of the apostles. All right, I'll leave the only Christian, allegedly Christian organization lower than the Catholic Church is possibly the Christian Post. Here's what they quote on Antonio as saying to the Pope. A question was born within me when I was only 4 or 5 years old. It consisted of a single word, God. Unquote. That's okay. So they quote that just so that you can be impressed and get all googly-eyed over Antonio. The actor, continues the author at Christian Post, the actor said he gradually found answers through the faith of his family and the religious devotion of ordinary people in his community. Notice, he gradually found answers. That sounds like a faith journey. So, and let's see, Byron Donalds, well, that's we're wondering if he's a Catholic, because Catholics, faith journey sounds like something you would hear at the local evangelical youth pastor's warm-up gig type thing with the teenage girls and whatnot. Faith journey, yeah. But here, he gradually found, through who? Through the gospel? Not the gospel. Through Jesus? Not Jesus. Through the faith of his family. That sounds like Shintoism and other worship of the ancestors, the faith of his family. What does that even mean? And the religious devotion of ordinary people. Of course, ordinary people being better than other people because they're ordinary. God said, don't be a respecter of persons. God only gave one religion, and that was the Jewish religion. So whatever religious devotion these ordinary people have, it's unbiblical. I mean, all right. Let's see. More from Antonio Banderas, though, because he's so good-looking and so rich. Not to be a respecter of persons, of course. Here's what he says. Antonio says to the Pope, my mother's eyes fixed. Her gaze and her devoted heart upon the Virgin. As her throne passed before our eyes. Okay, so he was inspired by his mother looking at a statue of Mary being paraded down the street in whatever Latin American cesspool this guy grew up in. And by the way, the reason Latin America is a cesspool is mostly because it was pillaged by the Catholic Church 500 years ago. So this is it. An icon of a statue of the Virgin Mary. Not even just a mistaken worshiping of the Virgin Mary, which the Catholic Church teaches, damnably, heretically, and all that. But a statue of Mary. And he says this in front of the Pope as if this is supposed to get him in good with the Pope. Why? Because it get him in good with the Pope. Let's see. Banderas went on to credit the humble and good people of Malaga, which apparently is the neighborhood he grew up in. Why is he crediting them? Because they bore the sacred images, even as they sought God. They helped answer faith-related questions, and they did so by leaving behind the self in order to embrace the we. Unquote. The we. Uh-huh. So the Catholic Church has always been sympathetic to the communists, if not outright communists, like with the last pope or the pope before? I forget. They've had their straight-up communist popes, but the Catholic Church is basically not that much different than the criminal gangs that run the communist parties. The Catholic Church comes in, it changes the ways people talk and think and speak and then busts them out for as much money as they can possibly get out of them. It's a lot like communism. Let's see, should I go on with Antonio Banderas? I can't make this as bad as a Kamala Harris speech. From the we, they move to the them, and from the them to all, and from all to the world, from the world to the universe, and from the universe to God, before returning to the earth with the intuition that God may be present in every particle. Oh, that sounds like animism, which is, I believe, pagan and condemned by the Catholic Church, but Because Antonio is so darn good looking and so rich, the Pope decided not to call him out on that one. Like the outright paganism right in my presence during my audience. You have to. Lucky you're so rich and good looking, young man, although you're not that young anymore. So you're not going to be that good looking for too much longer. But that's okay. You have enough money to make up for that. And so you'll be in good standing with the Catholic Church. The Pope will probably give Antonio Banderas another audience, even after Antonio is old and ugly, because he'll still be rich. According to Banderas, I'm sorry about that. According to the Christian Post, he said, quote, "We need to continue seeking truth, a path that can lead us toward the spiritual, the mysterious heart of God," unquote. And so the Christian Post, you can download the article. Just Google Christian Post, Antonio Banderas. I'm not going to link to it because I don't link to any of this garbage anymore. But the heart of God in the mind of Antonio Banderas, I'm sorry, the heart of God is mysterious to Antonio because Antonio has never simply sat down and read the Bible. Why? Well, the Catholic Church tells him he doesn't have to, and if he starts and then he starts asking too many questions, they tell him you're not allowed. And then if you start interpreting it, they will chain you to a stake and set you on fire. Oh, wait a minute. They don't do that anymore. But there was a time when if they declared you were a heretic and you did not say you were sorry adamantly enough, the Catholic Church, well, they didn't do it themselves. They have the police come, chain you to a stake, and then set you on fire while you were alive, which they did to William Tyndale, who translated the Bible into English. They did that. They burned him alive for translating the Bible into English. Well, they didn't do it. The Catholic Church didn't do it. Thomas More didn't do it himself. The Catholics didn't do it themselves. They had the good sense to call the authorities, for crying out loud. You know, just like they took Jesus outside the city before they crucified him. I mean, they weren't uncivilized about it when they burned William Tyndale at the stake, the Catholics. They had good manners, you know. Like when they cast Stephen outside the city walls before they stoned him to death. It's the Weekly Worldview. I know. I almost couldn't turn it off. Started to get a look from my extremely attractive audio engineer because it's one of those songs I could just let that whole thing play and then that would be a break. That would be considered a bumper. We don't have any sponsors here. We're not trying to sell you any ads. I don't need you to buy anything from me. I'll get by, okay? Meanwhile, it's to check in with the secular carnival. CNN appears to have jumped the shark into the utterly absurd and surreal world. If you get a chance, check this out. Google Kerry Kennedy. That's Kerry, K-E-R-R-Y, Kennedy. And CNN. And then I forget the CNN hostess's name. She used to be thin and good-looking, and now she looks really thick and angry. and I can't remember her name, but she's all bug-eyed now too, and it's almost as if she's going to explode from the pressure that is building up inside of her of just being so filled with the hatred required to read on CNN. There's just a certain level of vitriol and bitterness that has to be, especially in any woman who's going to read on CNN. And it seems to be getting to her. Just look at her face during this interview. Anyway, it's the CNN interviewer is interviewing Carrie Kennedy, who is the sister of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And Carrie Kennedy is telling the story of how Robert F. Kennedy threw a snake into a swimming pool full of children. Back, I don't know when, because, I mean, they're both like 150 years old, and she sounds just like him, too, with the bad voice and the whole thing going. I don't know if it runs in their side of the family or what, but she sounds exactly like him with the strained vocal cords. And she tells this story of what sounds like when they were kids or maybe teenagers. And her brother, there was a snake. He took the snake and he put it in the bag. And then the snake bit him on the hand a bunch of times. He put a mouse in the bag with the snake in front of a bunch of kids at a birthday party. And then he threw the snake in the pool. And then at the end of that, she says, this is why he should not be in the government. He should not be in charge of HHS. Because he threw a snake in the pool when he was 17. And anyway, it's just something to watch. If you want something amusing for about 3 minutes, you'll get a good laugh out of that. But that could be the end of CNN, though. The fact that they've gotten this absurd and ridiculous. And to not know you're that absurd and ridiculous when you are that is usually means you're about to hit the wall or go over the cliff. And so the bug-eyed, thick, hateful woman there at CNN, whatever her name was there, she's either done or the entire CNN calliope is just going to collapse to the ground. And then I saw this headline over from the Liberty Daily, which is one of my libertarian, allegedly right-wing, allegedly Christian, or at least Christian sympathetic, Christ is king, let's build the kingdom type, news aggregator site, the Liberty Daily, which is run by I'll leave it aside. But the headline was this: both parents work full-time, majority families, according to the census. So for the first time in American history, apparently, a majority of families that are the intact families, which may be the minority anymore, but families where there's actually a mother and a father, both of them work full-time now in a majority of American households, according to the census. And I just want to make a note that at my house, when I was little, both 100% of my parents worked full-time starting from the time I was about 9 years old. Before that, my mom stayed home. She worked part-time here and there, but I remember her mostly being home when I was little. But then at around 9 years old, mom went to work full-time, and she worked full-time all the time from then on, and so did my dad. And they never seemed to have enough money, and they were always at work. And 100%, by the way, at our house, 100% of parents were in the workforce full-time. And let me just tell you, it was catastrophic. It was catastrophic for us, the kids. It was not good. So the fact that both parents work full-time in a majority of families, that's worrisome. It's most worrisome for the families where 100% of the parents are working all the time. Catastrophic. It's the end of the country, I'm telling you. Very few of my friends who were latchkey kids, there was a whole bunch of us. Very few of us recovered. And the kids whose moms stayed home, they did a lot better, that's all. Okay, now from there, we go to the big religion file where we check in with two of the biggest religious people in big religion, J.D. Vance and Glenn Beck. That's right. This is from Glenn Beck's website, which I will not name. Too many of my Christian friends, I have to say, it's shocking to me how many of them get their news and opinions from Glenn Beck. I used to listen to Glenn Beck back when I was easily bamboozled by the ad men, which Glenn Beck is one of the most sophisticated and accomplished bamboozling ad men. And I don't listen to him anymore. I stopped listening to him during COVID when he... No, it was before COVID. He did a bit on... some kind of nut, either a cashew or an almond. Almonds in California, it takes a gallon or two or three of water to make. And Glenn Beck starts screaming about they should stop making almonds. They're running out of water. And I'm like, what are you, a communist? I realized then. He's not a communist, but he's just a bamboozling ad man, and he's a Mormon. So he's a pagan, which means he's an idiot. But having subscribed to one of the more laughable, stupid, impossible religions ever concocted by a relatively sophisticated bamboozling ad man. The whole Mormon thing. But anyway, not to offend any of my audience members who listen to Glenn Beck. And yes, I know Glenn Beck makes a lot more money than me. He's got a lot more advertisers than me. But then again, he's selling you ads. I'm not. So keep that in mind. Okay. J.D. Vance went on Glenn Beck's show not to be interviewed by one of Glenn Beck's minions, but by Glenn Beck himself. Why? This is big religion. Big. If you go to a big church and you pray to a big God, then this is your big religion right here, is when Glenn Beck interviews J.D. Vance, and it makes it on his website with the headline, From Arrogant Atheist to Jesus Follower. J.D. Vance opens up to Glenn Beck. Mm-hmm. That's right. Listen, and I love the way this opens. This is from Glenn Beck's website. He said, in a recent exclusive interview with Glenn Beck, and I'm thinking an exclusive interview with Glenn Beck? Like, what does that even mean? Does that mean J.D. Vance doesn't give interviews to anyone else? J.D. Vance is giving interviews to anybody with a microphone and a camera. How is this exclusive? Does that mean he wasn't talking to another guy at the very same time? I suppose you could say that. So whatever this means, he gave an exclusive interview to Glenn Beck. That means he wasn't talking to Howard Stern at the same time, I guess. All right. Glenn Beck says, can you talk a little bit about the moment you chose to commit to the faith? Unquote. And J.D. Vance goes, says, it was 2018. He says, I visited a Catholic cathedral. Oh, J.D. Vance? Oh, he's a big Catholic. He probably wears a habit underneath his suit. He's so Catholic. I'm sorry. Did I say a habit? I don't mean to imply that he's open to the idea of transgenderism or anything like that. Just for some reason, the ludicrosity of being a Catholic struck me as ludicrous as a man wearing a habit underneath his $3,000 suit. Not that I have anything against $3,000 suits, by the way. I prefer a $5,000 suit myself because obviously the tailoring is more sophisticated. But Vance said he went to a cathedral and he said he was curious about Christianity, but he wasn't yet ready to commit. He said he was feeling completely empty. He had a sense of despair. Oh, I'm sorry. He said at the cathedral that he went to, he went into this cathedral and he said the cathedral was completely empty. There was a sense of despair in the cathedral. There was nobody praying. And then, here, now this is a quote. Quote, there was just this beautiful sort of ray of light that came through the stained glass windows. Unquote.
How come everybody experienced
it? Hey, an experience. Experience trumps just about everything, especially in religion. You show me a man with a doctrine, and I'll show you a man with an experience, and the man with the experience will draw 100 times the crowd as the man with the doctrine. Mm-hmm. But wait, before we go on, and Glenn Beck didn't catch this because Glenn was busy writing the ad to sell you whatever he's selling you, survival gear. See, in the whatever Glenn was saying, while Glenn Beck was preparing and writing the ad, I noticed that J.D. Vance used extra words, which indicates he's making stuff up, which could be called lying, which I will say he's lying. When J.D. Vance said, and there was just this beautiful sort of ray of light that came through the stained glass. Why did he say sort of a ray of light? He already said it was beautiful. I mean, there's an adjective right there. Why a beautiful sort of? That is J.D. Vance not wanting to lie to God openly. And so he's leaving out the possibility that there wasn't a ray of light. And if God calls him on that, he'll say, well, I said sort of. See, I wasn't sure. And then he thinks God will be like, oh, okay. But actually, he's making up the whole story about the ray of light coming through the stained glass window because it's ludicrous. Not that it would mean anything anyways, but the fact that he's making it up makes it even worse. He's making up a story about a religious experience that would be meaningless even if it were true, which is doubly embarrassing and damnable and heretical and all of that. J.D. Vance. So just put me down as not impressed with J.D. Vance, okay? I know I'm that way about all the politicians, but whatever. It's not my fault. Vance goes on in the interview with Glenn Beck at the Big Religion show. At the time, the Catholic Church was under fire. Oh, it was. Oh, I remember. He goes on. He says, there was a scandal where I was in Pennsylvania, allegations of child abuse by over 300 priests. Over 1,000 young boys were victims. And then there were the systematic cover-ups and accusations and evidence and even proof that all of it was true. I mean, J.D. Vance doesn't say that in the interview because he'll never admit that any of that was true. But he just left out about the part about all the settlements that happened because there was so much overwhelming evidence that nobody wanted to go to court because it would all be shown to be irrefutably true. And then J.D. goes on. Glenn just takes a breath at that point. He's polishing up the ad copy for the next break. And Vance says, quote, I felt a sense that, you know, yes, the church is going through a tough spot, but things are going to be okay. And I belong here. Unquote. And Glenn Beck, he just slides his glasses out on the end of his nose. He doesn't say, what are you talking about? You heard about all the child molesters? You want to join the church? Are you some kind of freak or creep or what? Let me lock up my kids while you're in the studio. But Glenn Beck didn't say anything because this is a Big Religion interview. You don't want to. The last thing you want to do in Big Religion is ruffle any feathers or overturn any tables or make anybody uncomfortable or anything like that. So he says he belongs here, and then, I mean, Glenn Beck could have said, what, with the raping of all the boys you wanted to? But he didn't, no, he was polishing up the ad copy. And then, listen, now, J.D. Vance goes on, he says, and that was sort of the moment that I decided, you know what, for all my belly aching and back and forth, this is my home. I'm going to make this home as successful as possible and contribute, I mean, not by raping any boys or anything like all that was going on, but to contribute financially, especially, as much as I can. And in that, he goes on, quote, I should have said unquote there before I said something about him not raping any boys, which he didn't. And we don't want to make any accusations or imply that he's done anything like that because he hasn't. But the unquote should have been contribute because he didn't mention money either because, of course, he's not talking about money when he's talking about contributing to his church. Far be it from J.D. Vance or anyone associated with the Catholic Church to imply that contributing means anything like money. But then he goes on after mentioning his contributions and his contributing as much as he can, by the way, which he's a very rich man, so he can contribute a lot. And he's very talented, smart, intelligent. He's got big muscles, too. He was a Marine. He can lift heavy things. He could do, like, church cleanup day and mow the grass, repair the rafters. He's ready to contribute as much as he can. While he's out on the road being a politician 8.5 days a week, but he's going to give to the church plenty. And he goes on to say, Glenn Beck then asks him, that seems like a commitment to the church. Is that the same as the moment you chose to follow Christ? Beck asks. Not understanding, Glenn Beck, not being a Christian, that following Christ is not what Christianity is about. Not about following Christ. But most Christians don't even know that. The people reading whatever his website's called, or the retransmit there over on postchristian.com or wherever they find the story, they think it's all about following Christ. The Mormons think it's about following Christ. The Baptists, the Presbyterians, and the Methodists especially.
Especially.
It's Juneteenth weekend. Oh. Come on. Oh, all right. Wait, now we're going along here. I need to finish this up. Let's see here. J.D. Vance goes on to say, following Christ for me was not like a conversion on the road to Damascus. It was me slowly seeing reflections of Christian truth in the way that Christians live. And the way they raise their families. And over time, I just started to think, you know what? There's something real here. So did you catch the extra words? I just started to think, you know what? You don't need to say that. The reason you're saying that is because you're lying. You're just making all this up. So you don't have to be a psychologist to understand that J.D. Vance is just making all this up about being, I mean, he's a phony Catholic. And if he was a real Catholic, he'd be a phony Christian. So he's like double Dutch phony. Glenn Beck's editors say, Christ, he decided, that's talking about J.D. Vance. Christ, he decided, was something he wanted for himself and his family, too. How do we know that? Well, quote, I wanted to give my family a church community. And I kind of, you know, experimented with different churches and eventually, you know, found a home in a church that we love. And that's kind of where we are today, unquote. So that's J.D. Vance, quite possibly the next president of the United States, quite possibly the next guy that the Republican Party will be getting tattooed somewhere on their body. And he just totally made up his story of being converted into a fake Catholic. And all of the evangelicals will get on the hay wagon and ride it with him and all of that. And It just doesn't bode well. I'm sorry. Meanwhile, in order to be a hero in America today, all that's left to do is to simply raise a fuss about the utter devastation, desolation, and destruction of everything our forefathers worked hard to build and everything we inherited by the grace of God as it's being destroyed in front of us. If you just raise a fuss, it's a heroic act. And I'm not saying that sarcastically anymore. The destruction is so rampant and so vicious and violent that to even raise the slightest protest is a heroic act anymore. Case in point, the baseball players with the San Francisco Giants. The San Francisco Giants made the players wear a rainbow faggot emblem on their baseball hats during the game, which is sacrilegious, okay? I mean, I'm not going to claim that baseball is Christian, but it's at least more Christian than the Catholic Church, for crying out loud. Baseball is far more spiritually relevant and important than the Mormon Church. And for baseball to be defiled with the faggot rainbow emblem for the entire month of June, it's somebody needs to say something. I say something every June. And this June, Giants right-hander Loudon Raup slapped the patch over the faggot patch that read Genesis 9, 12 through 16, which is where the rainbow was first introduced by God, by the way. Not by the faggots on the mound, but by the living God who created the world and used the rainbow to promise that no matter how problematic you idiot people become, I will not destroy you again with a flood. The rainbow was a part of God's covenant with mankind, a promise that he would never flood the whole earth and kill everybody again. At least not with water. So I wish Rupp would have had, there might not have been room for another patch that, you know, the part about God destroying everything with fire this time. We were talking about like the worst way to die earlier. Me and my family, because these are the kind of things we entertain ourselves with. And I said, I think that my whole life, the scariest, worst way I ever thought to die would be to drown. And then we considered, well, what about being on fire? And I thought, that's pretty bad. I don't want to be on fire. I don't want to drown. Well, so God promised he wouldn't drown everyone. Even if they made baseball players wear the faggot patch, God has grace and mercy, and he's not going to kill everyone with a flood. But for all you people putting the faggot patch on the baseball players, I just want to warn you, the fire is coming. And so you need to repent and find forgiveness in the grace of God and the forgiveness through the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ, or you're all going to hell, straight to hell with jet rockets, where there will be no pride, there will be no pride night, there will be no baseball. There will be none of that. There will be no Major League Baseball. There's no Minor League Baseball. There's just eternal suffering as a worm in torment. And we don't want that for anyone. And that's why we're here on the Weekly Worldview, is to help as many people as we can avoid that. Politicians, baseball players, and especially the ordinary people. Here on Juneteenth weekend, God bless you all. We'll be back next time. Until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.